Welcome to the Sign Radio Show. In this episode, we talk about some of the recent and incoming parties, some new and some old websites, and Nobby joins us to talk about directing a demo.
Welcome to the Sign Radio Show, episode 12. I'm Oki.
I'm Ziphoid.
Yes, I'm here with Ziphoid. Axel will join us a little bit later. We have another fun-filled show for you. We have some chat. We have an interview coming up with Nobby of Prison Beings, talking about direction in demos. That's going to be a fun topic. Axel will join us for that. But before we get to that, let's talk about the things that are happening. I'm just done doing online outline happened, so I'm still a little bit in that outline vibe. It was very fun.
Well, you're just done, 20 minutes ago. So yeah. Really, really just
pretty much. And we're just at the prize giving ceremony. So now you all know when we recorded this. But yeah, we did it online. I don't know if you, did you catch any of it or did you manage?
Sadly not. It's way too much family stuff these days. So I haven't really been able to keep track.
Right. Yeah. And there's a lot, there's a lot of online parties happening. So it's fun. No, we did, we started on the Thursday as outline always starts on extension day. And we went on to now. We had a jam-packed program of bite battles and shader showdowns and competitions, and it was really fun. It was all free. We all did it. Everything was just free open. Just sign up and get a voting key, and basically it was Havoc and Numtech in an office running a stream with a lot of pre-recorded stuff, and then just we do a few compos, we have a few battles, and hang out for the weekend. It was really fun. We had lots of entries, good quality entries as well. So go check out the entries that came out. And some really great battles happening. Everything will be on YouTube eventually as well. So especially the bike battles is a new fun concept. I don't know if you know what that is.
Bike battles? No, not really.
Yeah, it's an online shader. Shader Showdown is an online programming battle, a live real-time battle, but it's in TIC-80.
Okay.
The TIC-80 fancy computer, and it's about size coding.
Right.
Yeah, so they started at a log byte. It's when you have 512 bytes you start with. You have to code, you get 25 minutes. You have to end up in 256 bytes and TIC-80 with an effect. So it's making an effect, but also fighting against the time and the size.
That can be quite stressful, I guess.
It's very stressful. I love it because it brings that extra layer of pressure with it. And we had 8 contestants at Outline that were all new to TIC-80 and to byte battling.
Oh,
and some well-versed, Gopher was in there, and FMS Cat was in there. So we had some people that were actually first coders, but they never really messed with TIC-80 before.
Hmm.
And it was really fun, and it's a really fun platform. And it was just, I did the commentary for them with Super Rogan. It was just really fun to see these people going on trips in 25 minutes because it's quite quick with effects on the screen. So you really see people iterate and, what am I doing? Nah, I don't know. That's the So that was fun. I like that's happening. The online parties are still a thing, unfortunately. Hopefully we have some parties coming up.
Yeah, and also, as we've touched the subject before, I think that when parties get back to normal, I think that the online participation bit will be quite interesting as well to see if we can keep that up, because more people can contribute and be part of it as well. How many people did sign up for Outline? Do you know that?
Oh, I have no numbers, unfortunately. Okay. How many people? We had about 400 viewers. We had 500 unique viewers.
That's nice.
We had quite a lot of entries, and indeed from all over the place, so that was really fun. We had 16 entries in the music competition, and they were all kind of pretty good, and tons of size coded intros, and the demo compo, we had a demo intro combined competition, but there was all kinds of products in there, from Atari intros to PC demos. There was even the Apple II demo by Dieter from Desire. It was really cool. He won second place.
Nice.
And we had both MFX and SMFX in the demo compo. So that was a fun first.
Okay.
Both the MFXs, Finnish MFX and Swedish MFX.
Of course. Oh, that's good. I mean, it'll give a good week of looking through stuff while doing work, of course, just to have a, a side note there. That's good.
Yeah, so it was for me, it was just fun to hang out and have this vibe. But I will say I miss people and I miss hanging out and I'm waiting. There's some other parties coming up, like when this goes out, Shadow Party has been done as well. Mm-hmm. I think it's also online. We have the demo nights in Switzerland coming up, which are in person, I think.
Yeah, I think so as well. I haven't looked into it, but that's the old Binsley thing, right?
Yeah. So it's from the Swiss demo scene. So yeah, people are like slowly warming up and there are people already making plans for real life demo parties. Like maybe at the end of the year, people are vaccinated, there'll be tests. It will be possible to have parties in real life. So let's see.
Yeah, indeed.
Going to be interesting. So that was that. So I'm still kind of coming down. So if I'm a little bit like sleepy sounding, it's because Outline was just 4 days of mayhem.
But it's good mayhem, though. That's the good part.
Oh, but absolutely. Yeah, very, very, like, I felt very warm inside. Just like Revision, we had the same of, like, there was just so many fun entries. People made good, happy stuff and felt good, like, felt cozy. It was a very cozy party.
Any good performances? Any DJ acts or anything?
Oh, yeah, we had fantastic DJ sets from DJ Homsky. Plaque, a Bypass, yeah. Did a Super Plaque, did a trance set, and an Italo, like, disco set that was absolutely bopping. Mm-hmm. Dip Switch did a dub set. Iming did a set. There was lots of the Turbo Analysis people made a bunch of mashup DJ sets with great visuals as well. It's all on YouTube.
Ah, cool.
No, it was really fun. Like, we had a really fun weekend hanging out. So I'm happy, but I'm also very tired.
Yeah. Well, you're worth the rest after we record this, of course.
Yes. I'm going to go to bed. But and the other things is like, ASCII Arena we're going to talk about, because you know about that. Talk about, what is ASCII Arena and it's back and why is that important?
Well, ASCII Arena was, I think, I'm not really sure when it started, about 8 or 10 years ago or something like that. Spot of Uproff, together with Dip Switch and a bunch of other people, have started gathering all sorts of ASCII and ANSI art and put that onto a BBS-styled website.
Of course, BBS styles.
Yeah, of course. And they have some upcoming stuff that will pop up during later of the year that I would love to tell you about, but I can't because they're kind of secret. Because
you're still on the NDA there, okay.
Yeah, it's sort of an NDA thing. Yeah, I could probably say that, hey, well, this could be cool. But no, I'm gonna leave that to spots.
That's okay. Teasers are cool, so we have stuff to look forward to. We can discuss on later shows. But yes, the website is now open. Is it askiarena.se?
Yes, correct. It's a fun project. They're actually uploading a lot of stuff there. And now they're actually doing an editor online as well. So you can edit your collections online on the site.
Right. So it will be an ASCII. It will be basically, they want it to be a website where ASCII and ANSI stuff as well, just ASCII.
Yes, some ANSI stuff as well. I mean,
so
mostly.
We have a hub of like all that stuff together. So if you want to find an ASCII, you know you can find it there.
Exactly. So that's where it's going. But just to segue on from this topic of people maintaining stuff, we have I'm kind of close to a project called SceneSat.
So how's it going?
Well, yeah, the big problem here is that basically I have built it, and me and Fnord have basically built the whole SceneSat system, and we have both families and we have all sorts of stuff, and the problem is I can't just let someone else just do this, take over this, because it's not documented. It had gazillion tweaks and quirks and things that not even I remember. So it's not that easy just to hand out. But finally, I've come to the point where I can let that bit go and just focus on some other stuff. And if
anybody wants to help, they can find you. Yes, go.
Yes, please. SceneSat.com, go.
Do it in the voice. Do a jingle now, real quick.
Oh, jingle. Oh, okay. In a world where you want to be website designing, please come to SceneSat.com. We need your help now.
Very good. I think it would help. Go to SceneSat. But yeah, no, that's a good question. I think indeed in the next episode, let's talk about this more, because it's a fun observation of like, oh, why is this so difficult? Why is this always with websites an issue?
Yeah, indeed.
And indeed that, like, I inherited this website. It's made of poo. Now I have to fix it.
Yep, that's sadly quite a common scenario, I must say.
And I've had stories about people having domain names and then like, oh yeah, shit, I own this domain name. Like, oh yeah, maybe I should give it to somebody that will actually take care of it, because I have no interest in this. But I still pay for it every year because I forgot I had it. And then, but we can get to it because somebody else owns it. Yeah, it's interesting. problems that we have.
Let's aim for next episode for this one.
Yeah, let's see if we can talk about it some more, like web development within a demo scene. Why is this such a problem?
Exactly, but I mean, there are people spawning new projects that will turn up on the web, like the Greets Graph project. Have you seen anything about that?
Yes, I briefly saw it. I'm not too sure. I saw a post by Provod going like, "God, it would be interesting to see which groups greeted who and how that relates to each other." I love this kind of statistical thinking of the demo scene. Like, data. Let's find a way to analyze this data. And then finding out that it was quite hard to harvest all these greets because there's tons of projects and some have the tons of products and some of the greets in the production. Some have the greets in the NFO file. So how do we...
Yeah.
So there is a website now where you can add the greets to a production, I think, and link the groups to each other.
Yep. So that's it's a beautiful concept, a beautiful idea. I mean, Mahoney did a similar, well, not a similar thing, but a starting point of a similar thing called scrolltext.com, where he extracted and ripped scroll text from a gazillion Amiga and Commodore 64 demos and some other platforms as well. But you can just go to scrolltext.com and, well, enter your name to see if you're in the scroll text. Where is it?
That's awesome. Just the index, because that's so people, like all these teenagers, had nothing better to do and just wrote like essays, wrote a scroll text in these intros and demos.
Yeah.
And they're all, I love a good scroll. I mean, they're boring during a competition, but I love a good scroll text because also the other ones, it gives you a good insight in the world at the time, because they're kind of like, especially teenagers, is kind of shit talking their friends and like, you owe me a crate of beer. And then that one time you stole my cookies. And there's all this kind of like bit of petty teenage angst. Yeah. And it's kind of like chest thumping. We're so cool. And yeah, it's cool. So scrolltext.com.
Yes. But the other one that is greetsgraph.jetlag.group. Yeah. Check that one out as well.
Check it out. And check the there's a thread, there's Provod starting, and then people going like, yeah, there's 133,360 productions. And it was like, some might have it in the NFO, so that makes it 287,534 productions we have to index now. So we see if we can crowdsource this and kind of have people add to it. But it's going to be really fun if we can make a graph of like, this group got greeted this many times by this group, and we got this whole kind of Eurovision, who is like greeting who and what are the relationships between these groups. And it's fun in a time, because I remember that like at one point greetings, like I think in the late 90s, early 2000s, greetings kind of phased out in the PC scene a little bit, because people were making these more like designer demos and were more abstracty stuff, and there was no time for text. We had like that whole scene poetry thing that kind of people got over, and then it was just like, I don't know, no text in your demo. Now it's just effects, and maybe in the NFO file we do some greets. And I have the feeling it's now coming back again, more in a harmony kind of way, like shouting out old friends instead of like our elite friends.
But yeah, and I mean, some people are taking it quite far in various demos when they actually build the greetings inside of the demo in a fashionable way as well.
Oh, and absolutely demos with, I mean, TBL always tries to do really cool greetings, and I've seen Byte Rapers do really cool greetings, and it's always awesome to be greeted in a really cool way.
Yeah.
When there's a voice in the music saying the greets. I think it's such a it's such an important part of the demo scene.
Yeah.
And I love also that Provod went like, this is absolutely unnecessary and a futile endeavor, but I want to know. I want this data somehow to connect this. And literally the first part was like, it would be fun like to see this graph and to see how this, what this is, how this looks. And we have all the data is there, but we just have to get it. So yeah, go check that out and see if you can help out. He's adding himself a few demos a day. It will take a few years. He comes. So let's see if you can help out.
Yeah, and then again, when someone who actually has a lot of time pops in there and starts finding that, hey, this is fun, that this will actually fill up quite quickly. We see that from the other crowdsurfing.
Yeah. It's a thing. Yeah.
Crowdsurfing. Well, it's a demo scene thing. Surfer, blah, 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 the game from, what's it called? The there is a, not crowdsurfing in that sense, but it connects me to the game that Purix have been working on. What's it called? It's surfing on something. Yeah, it's a demo
game. Wave Surfer, no, that's a music surfer game, or is it like... Yeah, but also, crowd surfing is...
Crowd surfing is
Subway Surfers. Is now,
Subway Surfer. Yeah, that's
our man behind the buttons knows all the things. Thank you, Gargai. But also crowd surfing, I just miss gigs. I haven't been to a gig in like 2 years, so I just missed concerts as well. Yeah. Like it's been this pandemic needs to be over. But yeah, no. I see Demo Zoo as well as getting so many stats in now, and it feels like, and we are Demo Zooers. We love gathering stats. I think we all are with stat nerds and.
Yeah,
I love that we have those endeavors online of like, oh, how is this? I've been using DemoZoo more and more to actually figure out like, oh yeah, how does, and it's super complete. Even really esoteric stuff that I was looking for is there. So people put a lot of effort in to keep keep it updated, which is awesome.
Yeah,
which is awesome.
Really, really good.
So yeah, Grease Graph. So check it out. So the we need an penultimate graph that shows all the grief relationships. Maybe it's grief relationships as well. We can do fuckings as well. Yeah, like, yeah, that's all part of it.
Yeah, there are so many ways we can greet and anti-greet or whatever. It's just
there's also maybe a whole episode worth of like the aesthetic of greeting and fuckings and where does it come from, and that whole kind of like our elite friends and our enemies, and were they really enemies or were they frenemies, and and how now it's indeed like it seems to be friendly competition, but some people are still like, no, those bastards in Farbrush, like it could happen.
Yeah, of course, but we will put some URLs in the show notes
scroll text in it as well. Let's put all these websites in so you can find yourself and you can help the degree graph, and let's make all these little projects work.
Yeah,
and it's fun. It's fun that people. It's also maybe a little bit of the lockdown. Like I'm kind of bored, and maybe let's just index all the greetings that we've ever done. See how that relates to each other.
Yep, indeed.
All right. Well, I think we should go to our interview at this moment.
Yes.
We have a big coming up now. The interview with Nobby. We talk about direction in the demo scene, which is a term that is used a lot by a lot of people, and it's difficult to catch. So talk to Nobby, who is an advocate about direction, and to talk about it, like what their opinion is, and maybe misconceptions and how to approach it. So that's going to be a good interview. Let's go to that. Our guest this week is Nobby, the decoder and musician for the groups Prison Beings and Apoc, and the winner of 7 Meteorics Award. And we're going to talk about direction in the demo scene in every way, shape, and form. Welcome, Nobby.
Hi, happy to be here.
Happy to have you, absolutely. And we have lots of questions about direction because you seem to be an outspoken person and you have opinions about direction. You even did a seminar about it at Demobit.
I did do a seminar, and I actually just yesterday finally got that it was a presentation at the party, but originally I sort of intended it to be more like an essay, so it was more like delivered as a speech at the party. It's kind of this weird amalgamation between an essay and a speech, and I was just actually I promised at the time that I would like more polish that text and put it up online for everyone to read. But I neglected to do that. So it's now like almost 2.5 years later. But I actually have it online now. And I was reading it too yesterday and actually found like myself that like I don't agree with a lot of the things that I said to a couple of years ago. But
what made your mind change?
I think I was maybe a bit too provocative and trying to be, there's a certain level of pretension maybe there. It was sort of intentional to be like get enough notice and enough like a reaction out of people, but I think it maybe went a bit far, but I do have it actually. I have it sort of slightly touched up and some grammar stuff fixed. It's available on prisonbeings.com/direction. It will be there when the podcast comes out.
Awesome. So immediately people reading for after this interview. Excellent. That's awesome. So yeah, so interesting points immediately you make, because direction, difficult topic. You said I was maybe too provocative, and that's a feeling I get. People feel like pretentiousness is clinging to direction.
Yeah, I think the problem with direction in scene is that we don't know what we mean by it. We have an idea and people just sort of use it in conversation, but I think everyone has a slightly different idea of what direction is. And I think it's kind of a slightly damaging because we have terms that we have a lot of terms that we do know like what they mean. We have our own terms like demo and intro, and also like track mo, yeah, and all these terms, and we know what they mean. We pretty much exactly know what we mean by them. But direction is very nebulous, because as far as I've seen, this was sort of my what I originally wanted to investigate in the talk I gave at DemoBit, is that where does direction actually come from? And my conclusion there was that it seems to, at least based on the evidence that I was able to gather, that it mostly came from like the scene.org awards, which were first organized in 2003 for the DemoScene productions, released in 2002. And they seem to just like define it then, and that's the earliest definition for this concept that I can find. What they defined it as back then, you can find this on archive.org if you go to find the scene.org website for those early years. They defined the best direction category as best design in a demo, intro, or video demo from the year of the awards. Releases that are coherent and have nice overall flow and good ideas. So that's already like... That could be anything.
Yep.
Yeah, it sounds like, indeed, I think what the demo scene, you're right, is what direction is, flow and coherence. And so what do you feel that hits the point or doesn't hit the point?
What is direction as, like, in the purest form? Like what does the actual word mean? And direction is just, it's directing something, like guiding something or supervising it. So it's the process of conducting the demo, having, like, organizing the creative vision, and it can be anything that you do to achieve that in any means. And it can manifest in ways as like the way you use sort of the virtual camera of your rendering, and the way you do editing, the way you choose to present the graphics. And the problem is that usually when we talk about direction, we sort of liken it to the way films do direction, which is inherently that it's quite locked down to like having something three-dimensional on screen and like directing a camera. But I think that's too narrow, because not every demo, of course, like needs to be like filmic. And I don't think like good making a demo that looks like and feels like a film is hallmark just by itself for good direction. Because and also it shuts down or closes off like a lot of old school platforms, which are not really capable of doing that. Because I think a lot of the most brilliantly directed demos are actually on the C64,
right?
Especially the works of Hollow Man, and those don't have hardly any 3D in them. They're mostly 2D or some abstract sort of pseudo three-dimensional scene.
Right. And what does the direction mean on that platform then, that you say like it's really well directed? What does that mean for people to understand?
Is it arranging the elements that you have in there? Basically, that basically you find the right way of combining those elements in those, particularly in the old platforms?
That's the question I usually get from most people. And that's where I think, like, I think that's the wrong way to think about direction overall. Oftentimes you, like, in my talk also, like, the thing I identified is that, like, the way people talk about direction, I have like a list of quotations that I've basically just picked up from Poet, that people use direction as in, like, and I'm going to use quotes here, there wasn't much direction, or so much direction, or not so much direction, or lack of direction. Like, it's spoken of as in, like, it's something quantifiable that you can add or reduce the direction in something. And it's of course, like, people don't explicitly mean that, but I think it speaks of that when they use language like that, they sort of haven't thought about it any more than that it's sort of akin to something that could be added or reduced.
It's also a very demo scene thing.
It is very demo scene. Like, we're gonna add or reduce the infinite blobs the amount of polygons in this model. Like, it's,
yeah.
But I think direction should be, it's not a technical merit. It's something you feel. What feels to you that is good direction? But then it's like, how do you identify that? I think usually it's just like when you identify something in the demo that you think that it's trying to do, something that it's trying to say, and then you think about, like, well, does it do that well? I think that's just the merit of good direction. And I don't think there's any other way of approaching that. So, for example, if you think about, like, what is a well-directed film, for at least for me, like, considering, like what does a film director do? It took me a long time. I didn't really, like, see it. Like, you can see, like, all the tangible things, like, what the actors on the screen, well, you can understand what the actors do, or even on like the special effects, well, you can understand like if it looks good, then it's good VFX, or like even editing, like you can, when if the cutting just like feels good, that's good. What does the director actually do? And the director is like, well, I don't think it's useful to or I don't think we should like just copy the definition of or the role of director from, again, shouldn't copy it from film, but I think it's a good way of thinking, like what does the director on films that do? They conduct all the actors and all the crew and the cinematography and everything else. They have the idea in their mind, like how the film is going to work and what how things are going to go together. And they have to have that immense, like they have that immense creative task on them to keep track of everything and make sure that everything is going to fit together and that it's going to be like a cohesive whole.
It is the coherence. So the Cinedog Awards description, I think, mentioned that of like it's a coherent. So I guess that feels like indeed, because I agree that is the I for the longest time didn't really realize like a director is, oh no, you have so many people to guide. And I think for demos as well, there's a lot of people working on a demo. So a director is actually getting it together to convey the message then, I guess, or what it wants to do, whatever that is.
Do you think it's also an overall guidance into all of the like all the parts, like in the film it's about from the camera work to the music, I mean you have to hold all the strings together basically, and everyone needs to follow have the same vision for the overall product, right?
Exactly. I think it's extremely multidisciplinary.
Yeah,
it's not just something like if you're a director, you're essentially like the person who leads and organizes the project. And I think the coherency that's the thing that I think the definition that Cine.org Awards used, that's the definition, the coherency is, I think, the key part that they got right in their definition.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's enough to just say that, like, if a demo is coherent, it's well-directed. It's one of the components.
So do you have some examples, maybe, to make it a bit more, I want to say, visible during a podcast, so that's funny, but for demos that people might not realize are well-directed, you think, that you said, no, this has great direction and for these reasons. Do you have an example for that? Because that might be interesting.
Yeah. I was thinking of, I could maybe even talk about a couple of my own works.
Sure.
Which I'd usually like, you of course know that usually like film directors don't want to talk about their work because they don't want to like, they don't want to explain it. But I think like for just to give an example, I think it would be, might be good to,
Informational. I mean, we need, cause that, I think it works the best when we can talk about something, I guess, cause it's such a, as you say, hard to describe and hard to learn and apply. So yeah, of course, go ahead.
The two interests that I'm most fond of in my, what's the word for like, what do you call like a discography of?
A discography, I want to say, is it in your portfolio, in your
The two intros in my own portfolio that I'm probably among the most fond of are probably Zetsubo and Weili. The thing that if you want to achieve good direction, I think the most important thing is that you need to have an idea. It needs to be something that it needs to be the thing that is the cohesion, the thing that like people will think of like this is cohesive, and it's cohesive because there's all the things are related to this one thing. And that one thing is the thing that you have to have. You don't need to have it necessarily initially. For example, with Weili, I was originally just playing around with, I just got a nice looking rendering thing going on. And I was trying to do things with it, just like play around with it, sort of mold it in my hands. And then I had several different parts and I just developed ideas from that it's this sort of Mono no avare, with a Japanese term meaning like this passing of things, this like or this like futility and inevitability, that there's something sort of alone and beautiful out there somewhere in the universe that will be gone, because the idea behind that demo is that to show this barren wasteland of a place that then is no more. That was the idea, and then I was trying to direct it in a way that would best convey that feeling.
Right. So it's actually very interesting because you say like I started with this render effect. I had this thing I made and I was playing with it, and then it got to Mono no Aware. So is that something that you have like inspired by all these concepts that are out, and or does that come to you when you're doing that? Like, oh, wait a minute, this reminds me of this, or? How does it work?
Yeah, it is usually like that. And I like, for something like that, I draw inspiration from various sources. Like people have identified, for example, Koya and Iskatsia, which of course is a big inspiration for me. Landscape shots from high above are inspired by the early parts of Koya and Iskatsia. But it's not really, I'm not telling the same story as Koya and Iskatsia. I'm just borrowing the visual language of the film.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually something I think is very important, that is like, you cannot really learn how to do these things by reading books. I've had people, like friends even, ask me, like, how do you do something, like, what's a good book to read to learn how to do, like, cinematography or something? Like, the problem is that, first of all, usually those books are, like, meant for, like, people who want to work in film. So they teach you how to work in set, like, who are the people you're going to be working with, like, what sort of equipment are these, what is the terminology, and most of the time you also, like, you shoot people. You photograph them and you light people and you frame people,
people
and you tell stories of people. That's not something we do in the demo scene. It's very rare to see any human subjects in demos. I can only think of a few notable examples that actually like managed to pull that off.
Popular demo.
but that's the thing. Like, is it really a human? It's a humanoid. It's this abstract humanoid character which has a glowing skin. And I think a great example of a demo which has that sort of like humanity in it is Eon by the Black Lotus. Even there, it does have like two-dimensional pixel graphics of humans, which are extraordinary. But for as far as like dynamic scenes with like cutting and editing and camera direction.
Yeah,
there's only really the dancing scene, which is fantastic. But even there, the human character is just like a blue polygons.
Yeah,
but it manages to still convey a lot. I think it's more useful to, or it's crucial to, that you try to learn the language of cinematography and editing and all these things. So what is the grammar? What does it mean that you cut like this, or you show something like this, or what is the speed at which you move the camera? What does it mean? What does it elicit?
Yeah,
there's no direct answer to that. I just do all those things by intuition. What feels like, what feels correct? What feels like, it does this say the right thing that I want to say?
Would you say the camera work is very essential in directing the demo? Like in the newer kind of demos, not in the old school platforms, obviously, but in the newer ones?
If you have a camera, then most likely it's crucial that you use it correctly.
No, I mean, like in the demos, like of course, mostly you have a camera anyway, right?
Yeah, possibly. I'm not sure. I'm not sure you necessarily, because it's the camera is of course a metaphor, because we don't actually have cameras. And when we make films, we have cameras because it's a necessity. It's part. Yeah, but in demos, you don't necessarily like have to think of it through a camera. It does help, and especially if you want to do something cinematic. Like, I'm also thinking of like I've, as far as I understand, like the Mercury 64K intros, a lot of them actually use like cranes. They have like a modifier that they do camera movements based on the physical constraints that a physical crane would have, which helps them to make more cinematic decisions. And I think things like abstractions and metaphors like that, when you make them concretions that you impose those limits on you, it really helps you to direct things in a specific way as well. I think it's comparatively easy to maybe make direct well in that way, because you can easily form those constrictions. But it doesn't. I think it's people easily think that I need to do those same things as well so that I can direct this way as well. But you don't need to direct.
Mm.
Is it also because it's what we know? Because it's very springs out to me is that we know how film direction works. That's what we've been watching for the last 100 years, and so people are used to it and expect a certain thing of it, and it's actually great that in the demo scene we don't have those restrictions, we don't have an actual camera, you can do whatever you want, which makes it even harder, I guess, because it doesn't exist yet.
It does yeah, absolutely, yeah. It does make it harder.
So you make a crane because that is what we know. It's like that thing of like, yeah, so, and then at least it fits in what people expect from, and that's what people throw the word direction around, because it compares it to maybe music videos as well as an example of shorter cinematic experiences and editing. I always have the feeling that people confuse good editing for good direction as well. I think editing is really important, and people tend to, when a movie is well edited, go like, oh, it was really well directed. And I'm like, I don't think it's the same thing.
I think it's part of it.
Yeah, it's not the same thing, but I think it's, I think all of that is very multidisciplinary.
Yeah.
And editing is, well, in film, it's more more of a separate skill. But I think in demos, because of just the way we structure the production, we don't have that many people working on it, on them. I think a lot of the time, the director probably has to do most of those editing decisions as well.
Mm. Yeah, because do you see that there were people, like in a demo scene, we had very straightforward disciplines. You had coders and artists and musicians and modelers. And I think for the longest time, the coder was the director.
Exactly, and that's exactly the thing that I talk about in the old mm-hmm. essay that I wrote. And those are also the parts that are probably the most provocative. I actually didn't really feel like reading those through, so I don't remember what I exactly said, but I just recall saying some pretty provocative things there.
But I guess maybe to make a point there of like coders become it because it was part of it, because it was straightforward.
Yeah, I think the point that I was making that is because of the very nature of scene, because we do things that run on computers in real time. The only, especially in the early days, the only way you could do that is to have the coder dictate that. And the coder was the one who was in control, the only one who could understand in technical terms how to make things go a specific way.
Yes.
So they were implicitly in control of all of that. But that's also, I don't think necessarily a coder person, there's nothing... I mean, I'm a coder, so like, and I direct things, yeah. But I don't think necessarily a coder person, they shouldn't necessarily be the person who, or they are not the person who knows the best how to direct.
Yeah, exactly. Not to talk down like, oh, coders shouldn't be there, or you should have a separate director. But I think, because I think even in the 90s, there were already groups that had like a director person that tried to guide, that tried to make something coherent because everybody was just making their things.
And yeah, then, okay, that is my understanding as well. I haven't actually, I would really like to read about something like that, but I haven't found like information where to find some about something like that. Maybe just need to read some old disc mags or something. But
I know some groups that had a person in charge. I mean, the old early, like, he's gonna hate it when I say it because I don't think he considers himself a director. But Super Rogue from Logic Design back in the day, he's now back as a size coder.
Uh-huh.
When Logic Design got quite big in the Netherlands, a bunch of the Dutch TBL members were in Logic Design before they went to TBL.
Mm-hmm.
Made a bunch of really nice DOS demos in the mid 90s, and he considered himself, he was the director, that he didn't, he was a musician, he could code a little bit, but he didn't do anything for the demo. he directed, yes, he said, I didn't do anything, and he directed it. He made sure that the pieces fitted, and they're incredibly 90s demos.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that he was the guy that tried to do that. So maybe check some Logic Design demos, and I wonder what you think of them.
Oh yeah, actually, that group name doesn't actually really even ring a bell. I mean, well, it's generic enough that I can say that, like,
yeah, and Dutch demo scene mid 90s. It was like, it's again a long time ago, and they didn't, like, they made an impact. They made a bunch of demos, then they separated in like 97.
But that's very interesting that there was the intention behind that, because I think that,
yeah,
even if you just like consciously think about it, like, we should try to make a demo like this, I think that will make the production very, like, just make it different.
Yeah.
That's something that we did a lot with, I don't want to go really into any specific details, but we did that a lot with Epoch demos, that we tried to make a lot of them in very different ways,
mm-hmm.
like having a totally different demo that we make in a new way that, like, doesn't do anything the same way as the previous one did. And I think that's why a lot of them are kind of distinct from one another to some extent.
Yeah. So not like just experimenting with the style instead of sticking to like every group. And that's maybe also that it's kind of alien to the demo scene, because you stick to your style, it's your group, it represents you.
Yeah, like for example, I guess I'm going to maybe go a bit into details. Like,
no, do. I mean, long form podcast.
Yeah, there's a couple of the techno demos that we did, like Emix,
mm-hmm.
that was obviously like, we just wanted to make like lots of tiny effects and then like string them together sort of in a like live direction fashion to a soundtrack that was also sort of pretending to be a live DJ mix.
Yeah.
And then there's the last bigger demo that we did, which is Epoch for the Masses, which was my idea that we, because I have one of our friends who ended up doing graphics for that demo. One of the criticism that he had always given was that demos with vocals usually tend to treat the vocals in a very bland way, that they would have just like text, the lyrics as text showing up asynchronously on screen. So I was like, well, maybe we should try to do something better with that. Like, try to have, like, instead of having text, try to have pictures that come up that sort of in a more abstract way represent that. The demo is very rough around the edges. We ran out of time as always, and it could have been a lot better. But it was still fun to do that because it was an approach that I hadn't really seen done in the scene as much.
Yeah. Because it's a good topic to go deeper in. Because indeed, as you said, like, I didn't have time to finish, which is also a problem in the demo scene, that we have deadlines to make it a competition, which makes it hard to sometimes finish or do something the proper way. And it's easier to just slap something on the screen.
Yeah. In my experience, it's usually that the deadline helps you to get shit done. You get things done with it, but you don't necessarily get them done in the way that you would have hoped, in the best possible way. But at least you get stuff done, which is a real problem for me, because if I don't have a deadline, then it's not going to get finished.
That's also the other side of the coin. Indeed. Like, yeah. All the time, you will always keep tinkering with it. It gives us the, oh God, yeah, such interesting things. If we have more questions.
Would you say that when you look back at Absolute Territory, for example, that piece that you got nominated for Best Direction, is that something that you look back to, well, okay, this was great direction, or what? How would you see that production now when you're looking back?
Oh, I actually forgot. Yeah, you're right. It did get nominated for Best Direction. And it's actually, I don't look at that particular intro, like, I don't look back to it too fondly, because I think it's too rough around the edges. But the productions I made afterwards, which are like Whaley and Tetsubo, the both of those have sort of the core that keeps the cohesion together.
Right.
So sort of thinking of talking about Tetsubo as well, because it's obviously very similar, because it's rendered sort of in the same way. It's path traced. But that also sort of began as just sort of a rendering experiment that, like, okay, this is a short amount of code. This fits in 4K. What can I do with it? And as I was playing around with it, you just sort of start to develop what the idea behind it is.
Would you say that the effect or that the limitation of it being a 4K forces you to direct it differently or put more focus on the direction?
I think it does help because it limits the scope so much that you know at least like how, that you can't go any further than this, that you have to do everything. Like you have this much space and you can probably do this many cuts and this many edits. And you just have to like you do the most of it. More than like making something size wise impressive, I think it's a really useful tool for actually making a demo, because it does limit you in not just like in a technical sense, but it does limit also your creative side.
Yeah, exactly. The constraints that we talked about, that as musicians, we know about that, like size limits and the constraints are safe. You know that you have those. You know that you can work within these. I can do whatever I want. Mm. But it gives me a certain set of borders and I have to stick into that. And that gives me some kind of guidance. I absolutely understand that.
There's also a psychological component to that, but because in a demo comp, you know that like anyone can make just about anything. So you're even though you think your demo is cool, someone might like just make something that's so many more times more interesting. But in 4K, you know that like, well, they're not going to make anything that's that much better than mine. So you're going to, I think it's a more motivating in the sense that you don't start to feel like, even if you don't think your thing is that good, you know that like nobody else can make something that's that much better.
It's an even playing field, even though in the last few years we see people raise that bar, and it gets actually increasingly more interesting.
And it's great when that bar does get raised, but at least you can sort of, as a creator, you can rationalize over it to make yourself not feel so bad while making something. Because at least for me, that's usually a struggle because there always does come that phase when you're sort of just feel like, oh, this is shit. This just doesn't work. But I think it's easier to deal with that when making an intro.
But yeah, to come back to like direction as the, yeah, because it's a vague thing. It's hard to talk about it. Like, is there a difference between direction and art direction, which also I think is what people sometimes might not distinguish, or is there even a difference, you think, like in a demo scene and how it's approached?
I think art direction, I think, is more concrete, and it's easier to approach in the sense that like in demos, it mostly would deal with like the visual aspects of that. How well have you formed the visual coherence and the visual language of the demo together? But whereas direction is more, it's more of a job. It's the act of leadership, which can contain so many more things.
Yeah.
Would you say for that in today's demo world for to work for more complex demos, you need a framework, like a tool, like, I don't know, like Pixtra does or like Conspiracy does, where Doom, for example, takes a lot of the direction parts, I guess, from the design perspective? Or would you say it actually requires such a framework for that person not to be the coder to give the direction?
I don't think it requires that, but I think it's again, like, to come back to like how things used to be done. You still can do those same decisions in the code, but it just limits like who can do those decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So I think like a lot of tools enable non-coders and basically anyone to come and produce things.
Okay, to make it a bit more concrete, because let's see if we can. Do you have some obvious examples of like good and bad direction and why you consider it good or bad? And it might be really subjective, I guess.
Well, what kind of demos have you appreciated for direction that came out recently?
That's a nicer question, actually. Yeah.
I usually would have a immediate list in my head because I would have just been participating in the Meteorics, but I actually did not participate in them this year, so I don't have such a list in my head.
In general, maybe like in overall, is that damage you got? Like, yeah.
There's a lot of tropes in the scene that very, very common things are technically easier to do and therefore push you to use those decisions,
right?
But are not maybe a good default. And one example is using very wide fields of view always. And wide field of view has its use cases. It has its place. For example, if you want to do some sort of, if you want to show a lot of things on screen at once. And that's actually something that I've tried to avoid. For example, in Tetsubo, even though it's sort of set in within a room, yeah, it has a very narrow field of view. And what I do is that I just don't render the front faces of the room. The rays just go through it. So I'm able to move the camera outside of the room. And then I only render like the back faces there. That makes that particular intro, for an example, look a bit different than most that would have been put in a room. Like, it's usually, I think in the same compo even, there was Snell's Window by Collapse, which has some fantastic rendering in it,
mm-hmm,
but it has like a camera set in a room and it uses like this fisheye lens that tries to show everything. And I'm saying that's not necessarily a bad directional decision, but I think that's the solution that coders usually more gravitate towards.
Yeah, it's because it's the known thing, and maybe good and bad is maybe difficult to use because it's good and bad is very, yeah, stats bad, good. But as you said, like it's you took the choice of like, it's a demo, I can do whatever I want, I can take the wall away.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And change it. And they were still stuck to that, like, no, this is like the real world, we have to use a fisheye because that's what you do in the situation.
Maybe that, I think that's probably a good way to put it, that like you have that creativity of like having any sort of a camera projection, but you don't feel comfortable moving the camera outside of the wall. And I'm not saying that necessarily like my demo is better for that. It was just a decision that I think made the demo look better. And
yeah, that you were happy with. And I think that's to keep the good and the bad and the better out of it, because that's just super, and that's what's so difficult with direction, because it's so hard to say. Because it's a choice somebody makes, and you can say like, I like this choice, it also clicks with me, I get what they want to say with it, or that this, because I have that with a lot of demos. I'm like, I like this, I don't know exactly why this clicks with me so much. Mm. I actually, maybe, I don't know, I have two examples I would like your opinion on. Is that maybe?
Oh, yeah, sure.
The first is Eidolon by Poobrain.
Eidolon.
It's a 64K.
I do remember it's from 2017. It's the one that won the compo.
Yeah, they worked really hard on it. It was like a huge project with, I think, Andro actually taking the role of a director.
Mm.
To make something serious for once, like to make a big thing, and everybody was on board.
I wouldn't have thought of that, but that's actually almost the perfect example to talk about, because I think it has a lot of really good things and a lot of things that I don't much care for. I think it's very consciously, I think, tries to employ a lot of the sort of language of cinema direction and cinematography.
Yeah.
One thing that I remember is the shot where the ball enters the complex or the building, the shots from above, and you can see the doors closing with the sort of the light shaft closing behind it. And I think that's like a very, very good visual metaphor that you can use.
Mm-hmm.
It has a lot of shots like that where there's clearly thought put into it. But as a short film, it didn't really
mm-hmm.
work for me, because I think it didn't really say anything particularly novel enough for me. Yeah, I guess the only thing that really sort of rubs me the wrong way about it is that the camera movements are they've like very well like recognized like what are like specific kinds of shots that and how things are different kind of shots are edited together. But I think the visual style is maybe a bit too barren, a bit too primitive. So that some of these things, because if you want to have a shot where you show like the vastness of a landscape, you have like something in the foreground and you have the foreground moving relatively quickly and then you have the background moving very slowly. But for that, you need to have a lot of detail in the foreground and you have to have the range there, like the actual like real world physical range that showcase that sort of, but because if you don't have that, then it's going to look fake. Even though the shot is like uses the exact language of cinematography, it's not going to feel the same if the sizes of the different things in relation to one another don't match.
And I guess it's also maybe because they set the very high bar because it was their first 64K as well.
That's true.
Yeah, so they made their own 64K system. So they were a Unity group before. They made a 64K system and then made that. So maybe they put the bar really high.
I think it's important to do that. It's important to have a bit of pretension and trying to aim a bit too high, because even if you fail, then at least you fail in an interesting way and in a way that most likely some people are going to be still like look fondly back on.
Yeah, exactly. And it was like they were Unity group and they were like, okay, then we're just going to win a 64K compo next year. And they did.
Yeah.
So I think I think the reason they did indeed, because I think they agree with a lot of the things, because it was a hard project for them. I mean, it took them a long time to get everything in because they'd never done it before.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I can believe that. We actually did have a 64K intro also in the same compo, which is sort of in the same situation. We were literally at the same time, we were sort of having the same, trying to do the same thing. And it is very hard to like just build something from ground up to be able and something that can like render and display something so grand.
Yeah, and then the other one I wanted to ask is A New World Awaits by Bicek that came out at Revision a few weeks ago.
Oh yeah, that's another demo that I have so much to say, and it was actually because it's made by CCE, my a very good friend of mine, and it was actually because we have a group of friends among like Finnish sceners, and we sort of just talk about demos together often. But we have in the past we've often been kind of secretive about the productions that we make, and then even our peer group only gets to see them at the compo. But we've sort of given up on that, and we have been more open about it. And it was really refreshing to see CCE work on this demo and all the different decisions he was doing. I didn't really see so much of the direction was only something I saw at the compo, but it was really a privilege to be able to witness the creative and technical process of putting that together. The thing about that intro from a technical sense is it uses like a real world data of camera shakes, which I think adds a lot to the found footage nature of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've all been using camera shakes a lot, of course, in the past. Like I've used it, but usually it's just that like you just rotate the camera with like purling noise, and it gives you the right impression. But it's not the real thing. At least subconsciously, I think it does give that sort of it does give something extra.
Because I had that feeling with that, exactly that's why I asked, is that they did the fractals that we know from 4Ks and shaders and made them so real, which gave this otherworldly vibe of like architecture that could never exist and that whole vibe. And I thought it was incredible for like, how did nobody ever think about this before? Like, it's such an easy idea if you think about it.
I think one of the important things there is that you don't move the camera too much. And I think CC really recognized and focused on that really well, that like when if you want to show that something is big, your camera cannot move much so that you imply the scale correctly in a directorial sense. I think that was one of the key things that was really well done there.
There's one thing I would like to know from you as well. You are, since you're also crazy talented on the music side, how would you say how do you work on the productions? I mean, is that something you have the coded content first, then you add the direction, and then you focus on the music? Or is that something that you jump back and forth in between those tasks?
That is a really good question. And I'm really glad you asked that, because I wanted to wrap back around to talking about music as well, because I really enjoy directing product and creating production is just by myself, because I have the full creative control. And as a musician, when you're working to a spec from someone else, I think it's, for me at least, it's really hard to often like understand what exactly someone wants. And I think it's really taxing to fulfill someone else's creative vision. So I really enjoy just handling the music all by myself for my productions. And usually I sort of do both of them at the same time. I oftentimes just do music just for fun. And then I do like half finished pieces, and I have them whenever I need something, and I'll finish them. And sometimes I just have a visual idea, and then I just like, okay, this needs music, and I'm going to have to come up something. But usually I almost always have, in my own process, I usually have a visual, and then I play around with it, and then I get an idea from it, and then I make the music for that, and then I direct it to the music. Right. I think music is probably the most important thing in a demo to get right, if you wanna have something that people will like remember, because we do a lot of things that are very different to what anyone else does, because we try to tell stories, but we don't have humans, which is it makes it very hard to tell and very limiting to tell stories. But we do still have music, and we can use the exact same musical language and the same conventions that any other music would use. So we get a lot of sort of for free. We don't have to invent, because we have to invent our own ways of telling stories, but we don't have to invent our own music. A good piece of music really helps you to direct to the music.
Right. Because as you said, it's nice to bring it up about the story, like we don't tell a story. And do you see, is there a difference between a story and a narrative? Of a demo can have a narrative but not a story. Like, can you have a plot without it being a story in a demo? Can you? Because I think that's also what you tried to say with, like, it has to be a coherent vibe. It has to show something.
That's also like an interesting piece of way that people, or interesting piece of language that people use to describe demos, that are this plot or narrative. And it's usually only like people talk about well-directed demos that they also have to have plots. I don't think it needs to have a plot or a narrative, but I think it just needs to have an idea. It needs to have something to communicate.
Exactly.
And it's of course easy to identify that when you have something that some sort of a story that is trying to be told, then you have to also direct that story. But I don't think those things are they don't go hand in hand. That you only need to have really focus on direction if you have something. Sort of an explicit story, like it's like a Andromeda software development demo or something like that.
So you don't need a story to have good direction. So it's like and it's also maybe because people are stuck in a movie vibe.
Yeah, and you also don't automatically have direction just because you have a story.
absolutely not. I think that's a really good point. That like I think a lot of people try to make this quote unquote like a story demo too, and then they just think that the direction, whatever that is, comes for free just by having an idea that, or like something that you want to tell to the audience.
Yeah, but I guess that's just something that we learn from the film industry, right? That because you link direction so tightly to to storytelling, so I guess that's probably the reason why it's that we tend to call that direction.
We expect it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so speaking about film, like, is there people whose work we should follow to get a better understanding, you think, what direction might mean or you can pick up on?
I don't think you can learn how to direct well from a demo. I think you can learn certain languages and conventions that can help you direct well, but the motivation for directing well has to come from within. The most interesting demos that I think have been really well directed, in other words, really well communicate something, I think are I already mentioned them by name, but are the works of Hollow Man. Basically, almost all of their Commodore 64 demos are extraordinarily intriguing. They just are. They're moving. They have emotion in them, and they try to talk about difficult subjects like life partners and various sorts of real world issues and emotions and like heartbreak and all these things.
Yeah, no, it's interesting that it's, especially that it is on C64, so a platform that people don't generally connect to direction, although there is a lot of stuff happening on C64 that seems to have it, like LFTs stuff as well, has a certain vibe to it that I think you can call good direction.
LFTs, is it Lunatico C64 from a few years ago, is also really, really fantastic. And it's especially the, like, for that demo especially, I would say that it's like the art direction in it is superb. The way it like uses a very cohesive visual language throughout all the different parts and scenes, and it's use a very limited color palette and these themes of like water and rain and just all the adjectives that we associate with, like with the word blue, because it's a very blue demo. So I think it's a very well thought out demo as well. We don't usually see that on C64 because it's such a comparatively primitive platform that we can't. It's really hard to have tools for that. So you essentially have to be a coder to be able to produce something for it. So so you have to be really good, most likely really good at coding, and you have to have that sort of humanistic insight into telling something and communicating something, and have like a really, really broad interests outside of just programming.
And that, I find that a really interesting point you bring up again is about the humanizing aspect of like making demos about difficult subjects, like to make it like that will make it, if it's coherent with our direction, it will make it stronger in the message. And that is what then hits people. And you can say like it's for direction that will, and that's hard to do. I think that's also the demo scene was always about like, I make blob. And now I make cube, and then I show them behind each other.
It doesn't necessarily have to be either humanistic. I wouldn't say, because there's also a fantastic demo. Let me look it up. It's by Booze Design, and it's not the most famous one.
It's not Edge of Disgrace.
It's not Edge of Disgrace, but it's Uncensored, which of course it has a theme. It has sort of like hacker sort of resistance theme in it, which is fine. I think it's a nice way to help keep a certain thematic vibe and keep things coherent. I think this demo has a very very good direction, just from the point of view that it has lots of great effects that are presented in a way that I think really works well with the soundtrack. So you know what because even if you're not a musician, you have an idea of like what the next chord is going to be based on what the previous chords have been. And I think it leads up very nicely from like, you know that there's going to be something magnificent coming, like a magnificent effect based on just what the music is doing. And I think they managed to fit those things together in that demo really well. And of course, because we have it's a very nostalgic platform for a lot of people, and being able to like do a really impressive effect also can have an emotional get an emotional reaction from people. I think like direction is also can be recognizing these things, like which effects you pair with a specific part of the music. I think that's one of that's really it's really well observed in that demo.
And I think it's also for people that put personal, have very personal demos that are very dear to them, shows that they will have more impact on other people, because that shows, I guess, that also comes out. Or sometimes, because that's also the thing that I watch a compo and sometimes a demo has an impact on me and I don't really know why. It's like, is that direction? Is that the, and I guess that's part of because it may be pure and it that makes it better. And I think that's so, that's why it's also so hard to catch of like, what is good direction? It's like, you can watch a bunch of really good movies of people that have visions and learn from that, I guess.
Yeah. I think if you don't make demos and if you don't make films, then like, what is good direction? It doesn't really matter to you. It just matters like, what's a good film. But as creators, like in the demo scene, we almost all of us, because we're not just people who consume demos, we are also people who create demos. Yeah. I think it's really more relevant to try to recognize those. Like if you think something is good, it's worthwhile to think like, why is it good?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I try a lot.
Yeah, and it's not I don't mean that it's like a chore or like something that like it's your responsibility to do this, but I just mean like, isn't it fun? I mean, I think it's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's just like, you just need that sort of like a curiosity of like, why does this make me feel this way? Yeah. And just like sort of reflect on it and like maybe try to discuss with the person or like try to find out something about them or.
Yeah, no, that's what, exactly what I like and exactly what I do is that I go up and I remember after Prison Beings, after Prison Beings, the group, after, the 4K that we just talked about, sorry, names. Absolute Territory.
Oh, right.
Because that, for me, I loved it because it clicked for me also the art style you used and that projection mapping on objects and stuff like that. And I loved it and the noise. And I remember seeking you out. I think it was even together with Gargai, just to tell you were awesome.
I remember that. It was a very big moment for me because it was the first party abroad for me, and like just like after that, getting to meet all the people, it was
me. And I think I kind of apologized on behalf of me and Gargai because I think we were quite rowdy, going, "Where is Nobi? Where is Nobi? We have to tell him he rules." That for me, because I want to find, because I just like you moved me, and that's what I love. For me, demos and parties are important for stuff that I see that moves me. Mm-hmm. And so that what you say is I try to always find that essence of like I look at something and I'm like I can see this is technically proficient but it just does nothing for me, or this is like this gives me and it's new insights, it's emotions, it's ideas, and I guess that's all for direction is like be inspired by doing things. And as a lot of things you said, it's like think out of the box, to constrain yourself, do something different, like vocals usually have text on the screen. Let's do something else, let's mess with that concept, which is also very demo scene, let's mess with it, let's change it.
I think a lot of people who have like trouble understanding this, I still feel like they're gonna come out of this discussion that that this wasn't very helpful, because a lot of the things that I usually just say is that Well, just think outside the box and try to think about things and have good ideas. Like, but that's really just all there is to it. Like try to watch different sorts of things and try to notice things and think about things and try to then just like copy things, because it's just no shame
in copying things.
Yeah,
yeah. Using ideas.
Yeah, because it's learning. Like one of the ways of learning music is just like playing other people's music, and then eventually you connect those different things that you learned from trying to implement other people's things, and you have your own ideas, and then you put them together, and eventually you probably will come up with something of your own as well. There's no like really a single way of doing like a specific, like you read a book and then you'll learn know how to direct well.
And that's actually a really nice sum up of like, we talk about direction, and unfortunately there isn't a clear cut, like read these books, watch these movies, and you know everything. But it's like, be curious and seek out stuff that you find interesting and think about why you think it's interesting and what it does to you.
Probably the most important quality of like anyone who aspires to do any sort of directing is to have curiosity and just be observant. Those two things, in my opinion, have at least helped me the most, I think.
And once more, where can we read the essay that you finished?
My old essay is available at prismbeings.com/direction. And again, take it with a grain of salt. It's an older work, and it was supposed to be slightly provocative, but it still might be an interesting read.
Now I actually have to read it.
Yeah, me too. I'm going to read it. I think it's okay. I think it's okay to be sometimes a bit provocative, to that kind of like make people be a bit like, what? And then pay more attention. Mm-hmm. It's good. It's a good tactic, as long as it's not too provocative. But what is too provocative?
As long as we have good faith for each other, and don't assume the worst, that like even if someone said something slightly like what, then you don't come from it like reading like this is the worst person. And
exactly, I think it's really important as well, like always be a little bit in good faith and always give a little bit of leeway. It's always healthy for everything. So yes, once more, thank you so much for joining us. That was a fantastic interview. Yeah, and hopefully more productions in the future. I don't know, take your time, no pressure.
Yeah,
but no pressure, but do it now.
Probably will be more, but I've been recently taking a bit of a break, and we'll probably a few years ago, I used to make productions that were like 10 productions per year, and I don't think I'm going to be returning to those levels of productivity probably ever again, but
it's fine. As long as do what you feel, again, and that's also the thing, do what you feel is right, and then Gargai and me will come up to you and go like, where's Nobi? You need to say awesome is.
And keep your curiosity.
No worries, we will meet again at least.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, thank you so much once again.
Yeah, thank you as well.
Yeah, that was it for the interview.
Yeah,
awesome.
Thanks.
All right, that was a good interview there. Interesting stuff to think about with Nobby, about direction. We have a lot to process and a thing to learn. And learning is good, and that's a thing. Be curious, I think.
Yes, for sure. I mean, the direction is quite a loose term anyway, so I don't really keep track of it. It's like looking at movies, for instance, like, okay, so directed by, but produced by, blah, blah, blah. What's the big difference here? And it was really good to have them talking about, Nobby did a great job of explaining a lot of things, for me at least.
Talking about it, I think, is the thing. Is there, it's like, it's difficult to learn, but it's to talk about it and to make yourself curious about, get out of your comfort zone, I think, is such a good message there, of like, experiment, explore, and what do you like, and what do you feel is the narrative for you, and what do you feel is it saying to you, not even necessarily narrative, but what does it mean? And that's, and people think, oh, it's so arty-farty, but I guess it's in everything. So lots of stuff to talk about. Yeah. And I think a good end to a great episode.
Yes, indeed.
I would like to thank you all again for listening. And if you have questions, please send us questions for question answer. If you have a question about direction, even maybe, send us questions to designradioshow@scene.org. And we can pick it up in the next episode. And see you in the next episode. We've been very consistent so far, so let's hope that we keep that up. But episode 13 is coming up, so that might be all jinxed.
Yeah, and you might get pied, right?
I always get pied. You don't know that, but I always, every episode I get pied. This show was hosted by Oki, Axel, and Ziphoid. It was produced, mixed, and edited by Gloom and Gargai. They continue to insist that this meeting could have been an email. Special thanks to Scene.org, Scene Set, and Bedfellas. Again, send your questions and feedback to designradioshow@scene.org or contact us on Design Radio Show Discord. If you like the show, please share it with your friends and give us a positive rating as well. You can find Design Radio Show on SceneSat as well as Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts. Alright, thank you so much. See you the next time. Goodbye.
This is also the fifth consecutive episode that Aki mentions Sofa World. He really must like it.